Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
All right, Leah Aguirre is here. She has been on the podcast before, and I just told you, Chip is stuck on a Zoom call, so he's going to jump in with us whenever he gets off of that. How rude is he?
He'll be on
for sure. He's texting me panicking because he's like, this was only supposed to be 30 minutes, but he is a very hard worker. So anyway, we have you here as a licensed clinical social worker to help us talk through these sex and dating questions. Chip and I get on here and it's like we can talk from our personal experience, obviously. But I like to have an expert opinion because sometimes I'm like, wait, am I giving the people the right advice here? And you actually really specialize in, well, the female aspect of dating, but the sex and dating and relationship stuff is really kind of your niche and where you're really headed. So tell the people a little bit about where you're shifting your focus and Her True Empowerment specifically.
Yeah. So I changed the handle of my Instagram page to Her True Empowerment because it really embodies everything I'm doing right now. So as I mentioned in previous conversation with you, I've dated a lot and I'm also a therapist and have a lot of training in trauma and self-worth and anxiety. And I've decided to marry the two together.
Love that.
Yeah. And I just use my clinical expertise and personal experiences to help empower other women in this dating culture and arena. It's really tough. If anyone has truly dated, it's not easy and it wears on you. And if you dated how I did in my 20s, like almost the entirety of my 20s, I did it so compulsively, super fast, and really just to get validated. Like the goal was to be validated by a man and to have my partner and to meet someone. And I realized I was kind of a shell of a person at the end of, like, it's kind of sad. But then I think at 30, I was just kind of exhausted. And I was like, I need to start shifting and changing the way I do things. And then really did the inner work myself. I took therapy, not more seriously, but did more, I guess, work as far as past experiences and how that impacted my self-worth and identity and then how that applied to dating and the relationships I had been in and some of the terrible encounters I had been in. And so really the goal of my work now is to empower other women to date with confidence and intention and to feel truly empowered to do the things that they want to do that are in line with their values around everything, but really with dating and relationships. Because I think so many of us women specifically tend to lose themselves in relationships and dating.
Completely. I totally resonate with that. And I think that a lot of times people really downplay how much your past experiences, even traumatic or just like childhood programming that has come up, even like female programming, like we've talked about just with patriarchal thinking, it's like so impactful to your dating and your relationships. And a lot of people just miss that. So if you haven't done the work, you're just going to continue to replay these whole dynamics over and over and over. I know for me, it's like, that's how it's gone. It's so subconscious. It's not like, and I've done a lot of work, but like I can kind of regress a little bit when my inner child starts leading the show because, and if I'm not really like working my program, because it is just so ingrained in us. And it's kind of like this forever dynamic we'll always be working through.
It's hard because I, like you said, I think so many of us are resistant to doing that work. And, or for me, I remember in my, this is after I graduated from my undergrad program, I was 22 and I went to therapy to talk about a breakup, and she wanted to talk about my childhood experiences and like everything else besides the breakup. And so I went,
No, I'm here to talk about the guy.
I know. I'm like, I'm devastated, heartbroken. You know, I went into this with like, this is what I want to do. And I remember actually didn't go back, and she was totally fine. It was nothing about this therapist, but I just was so resistant to the idea of addressing anything but the current crisis. We'll call it a crisis. And cause I was just so devastated and grieving. And so I really was totally against this idea of doing this work and like addressing past experiences. And when I've really done the work now, I've realized how my interactions with males, not so much family, but even just in middle school, have impacted my self-worth and self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And I felt at a very young age objectified. So then when I took that into like dating and relationships, that definitely came up.
Yeah.
And kind of hinged on being validated or seen as attractive, or like I felt very sexualized, not necessarily having lots of sex, but just this idea of seeing myself as more of a sexual object. And that really messed with me.
Well, it's so big in our culture. I mean, I've talked about this a lot on this podcast and especially on Instagram, but I didn't even realize how much that sexualized mentality was in me. Because it's just been something we've done for so long. And it's like, if you, are not even seeking validation, but it just sort of feels like this role that we've played, and it's just like how we know how to do it. So like I've mentioned, I've really struggled recently with like, is me posting myself in a bathing suit objectifying? Am I sexualizing myself and downplaying like what's actually me and the brain that I do have and the emotions that I do have, by just putting that out there as the thing that people see on my social media or whatever? Yes, they get a lot of likes. And that's the hard part, right? It's like you get this validation for this thing, or I sell a bunch of bathing suits or whatever it is. And then that becomes the business or the focus. And it's like, wait, but that is literally the tiniest part of me. And is that really how I want to show myself to the world? And then on the flip side, you're like, you hear about like women owning their sexuality and all this stuff. And like, I'm finally understanding like that ain't the way to do it. Like, that's not it. Yeah. But we aren't really like, I think we're finally talking about ways to do it and really own your feminism. But other than that, like other than recently, I don't think we've been taught how to do that. And so it's just like, we think that like playing into the male role of sexuality and what they want from us is owning your sexuality. And like, that's not it.
This whole idea of sex sells, because it does in our capitalistic culture, right? Like that's very true. And even like, so you look on dating apps and it's like, do I post this picture in this huge dress with cleavage, or is that going to be sending the wrong message? Even though you're like, I look good. And like, I work, you know, I work hard to be healthy and to like, you know, to like feel good in my skin and in the clothing that I wear. And, but then there's this like other conversation in your head going, is this going to send the wrong message? Are they going to look at me as just this sexual object? Are they just going to try to sleep with me? And so it's just this balance. And I think you're right. We've had this like whole sexual empowerment move, or sex, like, yeah, like sexual empowerment, right? Like positive, sex positive movement that we've had. And I think it's great. I also think if we're seeing sex as power, is that empowerment? If we're seeing
sex. Oh my God, it's so good. Yes.
You know, I think there's a disconnect there.
It's actually just using sex to manipulate, really. Like you're taking sex and you know that this is something that men want from us. So you're, or it could be women, whatever kind of relationship you're in, but you dangle it in front of another person as this thing to get your power. Yeah. And that, you're right. I don't think that that is really embodying your own self and your own true feminine essence, like to feel empowered. It's just using something to manipulate.
It's this currency that I think we've started to use, and we've found ways to use it to our advantage versus I want to embrace like my curves. And I think some people are totally, it's pure like that. It is something pure to them. But I think it's it's something that I struggled with earlier on in college. And then after college was, am I doing it to get attention and to seek out validation, or am I doing this because I do love my body? And I, at the time, I didn't love my body. So I think it's one of those things where I think it's a balance. I don't think there's like a right or wrong way, but I do think we have to be cognizant of it, because otherwise we will be in situations where we don't feel empowered, even though, you know, we're like posting all these things, we're saying we're empowered, but we don't feel that way.
Yeah. I think you're right. It's about motivation for me. That's what I've really tried to like tap into, is what am I seeking here? And if I'm seeking validation from other people, that, you know, that's something outside of myself, and it has actually nothing to do with my own empowerment. So anyway, we have a ton of questions for you. I love this new direction that you're going. Obviously, I really resonate with it, and I can't wait to talk about what you have coming up as well. We'll do that in just a bit. But we got a lot of questions when I posted about you being on the podcast. And like I said, Chip and I talk about our own experiences, but people love when we have an expert, because it really does help to feel like you're getting, you know, really good advice. So let's go ahead and just dive in. This, I just said, what relationship questions do you guys have for our expert, the expert being you? And so we got a ton of responses. This one comes in and she says, can we talk about in-laws in one episode? Your married listeners might love this. I personally need it. How do you navigate that relationship?
Oh, so interesting. Yeah. So that's a very broad question. I mean, I'm not married, so I can't speak to that. I'm not a couples therapist, by the way, but I think having a cordial relationship or a pleasant relationship with in-laws makes for the best type of relationship. In that, then there's no power dynamic or struggle. And I feel like that's where a lot of people struggle with. They feel like they have to choose like their parents over their partner. Mm. And it becomes this, I guess, this kind of war, whether it's said out loud or not, where you're trying to navigate like preference. Like, do I choose my partner over what my parents want? Or that becomes a priority, is having your parents get along with your partner. I don't know. So what do you think that question? That's a very broad question.
I mean, I think you're right. It's very broad. And I think the best we could do with just such a simple question without having details is just to kind of say, it's like, I mean, you want there to be peace. Obviously, like, I think boundaries would be essential in these kind of relationships. The times that I've been in really long-term relationships, it is a tough one to navigate if the in-laws don't respect boundaries. And that, I've had that experience in a couple of relationships. And so I think it does become more about communication with your partner, ultimately, of like, hey, like, we need to decide something for ourselves, for our unit, and then like navigate the delivery. It's so difficult. And I found this a lot with men. I don't know if you've noticed this, but like, men and their moms seem to have like really weird boundary lines. And the mom sometimes can almost feel like this ownership over the son, and maybe not let go of that, you know, as they age and then as a new woman comes into life. And so the story I make up with this question is maybe that would be part of the dynamic, is just like, you know, the parents kind of walking all over this new person. And
I think you said boundaries. I think that's like the key. And I also think coming as a united front versus, so say your partner's like, oh, well, she doesn't want you to do this anymore, can become then us, like, you know, it's her versus them. So totally. I think the united front and you as a couple coming up with, even if it's, you know, let's say one of the partners of it's their in-laws that they're uncomfortable with. So they're trying to express that maybe they're not comfortable with parents just like popping by on the account. Something like that, like as a united front, communicating this or having your partner communicate that, but not saying it's putting blame on one person or another. Just say, this is what we need as a couple, or this is what we need as a family unit, is to, you know, for you to respect this boundary. But I think that's where instead of it's, you know, you're the middle person and doing all the like communication, we call that like triangulation. So then the, you know, we'll say the mom puts her son in the middle and is trying to kind of create this dynamic, this very strange dynamic. It has to be united, because otherwise there's going to be so much miscommunication. It's going to be like a battle of who gets whose attention, who means more, and you want it to come from a united front.
Especially once you're married. I mean, maybe if you're dating and it's not as serious, it's not, you know, maybe it's not fully there, but I do think a united front is always helpful. But when you're married, It has to be united front against the world, sort of.
I also you can't choose your in-laws. So I think, I remember actually, I was recently at this networking event, and this woman who we were connecting with was saying, it was kind of like giving us this warning about the in-laws matter. Don't marry into a family with in-laws that are difficult, but you can't. Yeah. Can't choose your parents' family. You can't choose your partner. Sorry, you can't choose your partner's family. You can't choose your partner's history. I think that's unfair. I think if your partner's not willing to help with establishing boundaries and creating a dynamic that works for you as a couple with their parents, I think that's one thing. But I don't think we can write someone off because of their background or dynamics. I think it's a situation by situation type thing too.
Yeah, I totally agree. All right, let's move on. Transitioning from talking to dating, how to avoid getting stuck in the, what is FWB zone? Friend with benefits. Oh, God, all these lingos. I'm like, what? How do you avoid getting stuck in the friends with benefits zone?
That's a good question. Chip is about to connect, huh? Okay. I was like, I'm distracted. So I think you have to be direct from the beginning. I think this is what's hard, is that girls especially, and I can't generalize, but a lot of women want to be easy breezy and they want to be easygoing and come off as like, I'm the cool girl and I don't care what we are and like, I'll just go with the flow. And then they have these expectations like this guy will change, you know, like we'll become closer, things will get more serious, and they don't express it. So there's just So I think if you are wanting something more serious, express it from the get-go. Not that you have to say, I want you to be my boyfriend today, but this is what I hope for us and our relationship moving forward. Some people don't know what they want. So I think if you start noticing you started this casual relationship or dynamic and you're starting to notice their feelings and you're feeling like jealous or you're feeling like this person is not being respectful or that it's not mutual, I think you just have to be direct. I think it's whenever you're starting to feel uncomfortable and you're feeling like not safer, that you can't trust this person. I think you have to be direct and just go in. And I think that's hard for a lot of people to be direct, but it's so important.
Yeah. I read something yesterday. Another therapist I follow posted this on Instagram, but he said there's really no right, quote unquote, right time to do the DTR. Like, it's just whenever you feel that it's needed. So it could be the first date. It could be 2 months in. It could be a year in. You know, it's just like navigating, like you said, when do you start to feel unsafe and when does it come up for you? And then that's just the right way. Like, there's not like a rule book on that that has this direct time. It's more about listening to your body and listening to your instincts.
And people want rules. That's the thing. And people want the, like, there's that 3-date rule. Like, you have sex at the third date.
Right.
And the thing is, and I'm not like encouraging one way or another or saying it's bad to have sex before or it's bad to wait after, but I think it's not super black and white, because it really depends on the relationship. It depends on how safe and comfortable you feel, and safe meaning even like, is this person not going to murder me? Like, I mean, I think you have to really take your safety into consideration, but or what do you need to have sex and be intimate with someone? Do you need to feel respected? Which if it's just, you know, this person respects you and your autonomy and your independence and as a person, not necessarily that they're committed to you, but like, what are you seeking before intimacy? And I think you have to understand that. I don't think it's a third date rule. And I actually wrote a blog post about this and got a lot of pushback. I got a lot of emails saying that I was encouraging like people to have sex sooner. I'm like, it's neither way. What you feel most comfortable with. And I think there's no rule. And I don't think if you don't want to have sex on the third date, you don't have to. If you feel like this guy is going to leave or this person's going to leave you because you don't have sex with them, that's a red flag, right? Like if someone's out the door because you're not being intimate with them by the third date, that's a problem. So you don't pull it, I think.
I think that's right. And we know one of our really good friends had sex with a guy on the first date and they're still together almost 2 years later. So I think it just really does depend on your personality, what you're comfortable with, and then the relationship itself.
Right. And some people are go with the flow, like, and they're like, we'll just see what happens. And I think that's fine if you communicate that. I'm not anti-casual sex, but I think you have to be explicit about that. Mm-hmm. I think if people go into a situation, one wanting a serious relationship, the other person have no intention of that. Mm-hmm. it's going to end messy. It typically does.
Totally. Well, there he is. Hello, Chip.
Hi. Sorry I'm late. I'm a terrible person.
You're really the worst.
I was holding out to the third date.
We're just going through. We have a ton of listener questions this week. And so I'm trying to just get into it with Leah because I want to try to get through all the questions. I love this question because this is something I want to know for myself. How do you spot a narcissistic guy early on?
Shots fired.
Is it though?
Oh, no.
It's just this the truth. Help.
The hard part is that they're so good. They are so good. They're going to
love bombing feels so good.
Well, and I will say though, if that happens right away, I say be wary. So if someone's like trying to sweep you off your feet on the first day, like, you know, like let's travel the world, or I can see this, I can see you being the love of my life on the first or second date, I think that's a red flag.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, but what if it doesn't look like that? I've had that experience. It seems so intense and fun in the beginning, especially if you're a person who grew up in chaos like me. I'm drawn to that kind of stuff, but I know how it plays out. However, in other circumstances, I have just felt like maybe I read it as we're really aligned. Like maybe the personality type picks up on what I would want. And so they start feeding that, but it seems so genuinely like what they're interested in too.
You're totally right. It's a tactic because they're mirroring you. Like I have the same interest. They're going to try to create like faux intimacy. And I actually talk about like, this is what they do on The Bachelor all the time. Not, and I don't think they're all narcissists, by the way.
But
there's this sharing of personal information right off the bat. And that sharing has to be earned. If someone shares something so deep or expects that from you right away, to me, and I'm not saying it's, again, there are instances where you can, but if someone wants to put it out there right away or like expects you to be vulnerable right away and create this faux sense of intimacy, that's the way to manipulate someone too. Mm. Now we're super close. Now we've like both gotten to know each other on this deep level within like one date. And so now like we have this level of closeness that you wouldn't have with someone else. And I'm understanding and validating and can hold space for you. And it's, I think those things, I think it's great to be honest and transparent and vulnerable, but I think that you need to do that with like a guardrail. You have to do it with a person that you really truly feel like you can trust. And how can you know that right away off day one with someone? But I do
That's
know
that true.
People with narcissistic traits will try to align with you and mirror you and create this persona of I'm here for you. And it can, and they lay it on thick. I think too, it's that charming kind of charismatic person
every time.
Yeah. I think when they're, and I think that also can be a red flag though, if they're like listening to you, but also talking about how great they are, but not overtly, like it's not overt. It's very much, they want to talk about their accomplishments. They want to talk about everything that they've done. They're really trying to lay it on thick. And I think it can be attractive for a lot of people. Cause we like confidence. Confidence is attractive. It's like human evolution. Like we want to see someone who's strong and who could take care of us. But at the end of the day, I think if someone's just talking about themselves, that's a red flag to me of narcissism.
Yeah. But like, what if it doesn't look like, I've had experiences where it just doesn't look like that. In fact, it almost is like a fake humble and let's talk more about you.
That's interesting. I mean, that's the thing is, it's one thing that sometimes you have to tease out over a few dates or like,
yeah,
it's not something I know. I wish people want to spot the narcissist. It's not that easy.
No. But
if someone's trying to push your boundaries, like I think, and subtly again, so say you're like, they're like, hey, like, let's meet your friends. Like it's, you know, like I want, and then they're kind of pushy with stuff like that. And it's pretty new and you're not feeling comfortable and something you're just like, no, I wouldn't do this with anyone else. And they're kind of pushing, like, right, pushing it a little bit more and a little bit more, something like that, or meeting parents, like trying to really like create this closeness with you. Mm-hmm. That doesn't feel like that should happen within a first or second date or third date. I think that's a sign too, because they will want to create this closeness, this false sense of closeness pretty early on.
The false sense of closeness, I totally get. And I'm a person who's very open. I mean, I talk about like my whole entire life publicly, and it's been something that I've really tried to have said to myself, like, I really need to pay attention to this when I'm go back out into the dating world, because I like essentially offer up every way that you could fuck me over on a platter to unsafe people, because I just tell everybody everything. And it's like, that's not really safe either. What was my train of thought to that? Oh, the boundaries thing, and like looking at if they respect your boundaries, because I think lack of respect and lack of empathy are the two things that I've noticed as patterns in those kind of relationships. And so I'm paying attention more to that. Like, are they respecting me from the get-go? And as we kind of get a further along in the dating process, and then what's their level of empathy and care for others? Like, because that is like the number one thing, is the inability to put yourself in someone else's shoes or feel like understanding of someone else, have compassion.
Like how they treat other people, how they treat servers, how they treat people that they're crossing paths with. I think that like how they, if they're judging other people, like if they're making slight remarks about other people in front of you, I agree. So I think, how they
really, or their exes.
Yes.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
Okay. Why do guys act like they like you and then fade out?
Oh.
Chip likes that one. Do you do that, Chip?
I mean, I probably have.
Have you faced that?
I mean, I can only speak for myself, but I would think that that's every situation when you go into a date, the hope is that you would like them, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to kind of act like you do. So I guess the context that's missing from this question is how long this person was True. With somebody. So if it's something that drags on for 6 months and then someone just ghosts you, I've never done that. Mm-hmm. But have I been on a few dates where I'm like, I see, oh, I like this about this person or this about that person. And you try to lean in and find something there, and then you just don't. And you're like, well, fuck it. What I'm going to stop wasting my time.
Right. Like, you would appreciate a conversation. Also, why does your voice sound so low right now? It's like,
I don't know. I think it has to do with like
the way you're sitting,
stagecoach and all that stuff. No,
he's like, been traveling, partying.
I've been traveling. Yeah.
Are you hungover today?
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Okay, I believe you.
Yes. but yeah, I mean, I also think too, it's like, it's weird when you've only been on a few dates that someone feels like they need to be broken up with too, you know?
That's true. So I just always appreciate communication either way. Like, hey, I'm just not feeling this vibe.
Right.
You know, like it feels more like a friend thing.
So this is the thing I have though, is I think there's two parts. I think there's some people that are avoidant, that mm-hmm. are avoidant attachment. And so they like kind of find themselves like really being into this person. And they're like, actually, it's going way too fast now because I clearly have feelings. They have feelings for me. Now they want to get married to me. And then they're going to just run the other way because yes. it's like much too fast, even though they maybe have some feelings that are similar to the other person. And I also think, I think that was perfectly said. You don't go into a situation wanting it to end. Like most of us want it to work out with someone. We want to be about someone, or if we're introduced to someone by someone else, we like, you know, we want it to work out because we see these positive qualities and you're like really, really rooting for it to work. And then you're putting all your hopes in it. And then you're just realizing I can't force it any longer. Yeah. I don't know. I think communication is right. I think what's hard, and I try to be super communicative, and I don't know about you, Kelly, with men, but when I've been communicative about it not working out, I've been scared sometimes because the reaction I get is usually really extreme and terrible. So that's where I think some people will ghost, and probably why other, like, it's why men ghost too. Like, they don't want to deal with the reaction of the other person. Like, being like heartbroken, like, you know, and just, so then they just ghost completely and they go the other direction versus, hey, I'm just not feeling it, or something's just not right, or I'm not ready for this. I mean, I think that's so simple, but I do think I had some really extreme reactions when I tried to be honest with guys, and it was like calling me names, and like one guy, like I ended up blocking him, and this is years ago, and then he ended up like messaging me on his like iCloud email, like just, he was able to get in there, and it was like then harassing me. Yeah. So it's like, I think there's also fear of confrontation because of some people do have extreme responses, but I still don't think it makes it okay to ghost.
No, I agree. And I think that I take it for granted. I'm really comfortable communicating, period. Like I'll communicate about anything if it's uncomfortable or not. Like I get uncomfortable, but I'll power through it. And I think a lot of people would rather just not. And they're like, okay, this is going to be a hard conversation, or they don't know how. And it's like, it's actually so much more loving and kind to say to somebody. So like, let somebody go and be like, hey, I'm just not, the vibe isn't connecting for me, or whatever it is that you would say. It could be really simple, but you give them the freedom from stopping the worry or the second guessing of themselves. Yeah. And they can just move on with their life versus like spinning and feeling like, personalizing it like it was something with them, you know, like sometimes it's just not a match.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I think too, and I'm guilty of doing it myself, but I do think that that guilt from not communicating builds up over time and is just not something that you want to carry.
Yeah.
So it's such a relief when you actually communicate something that you're feeling really uncomfortable about, because once it's done, and it gets to exit your body too, you mm-hmm. know, like you might have a little residual effect, you know, because someone blows up or doesn't go as you had hoped, but at least it's behind you, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah. I think it's powering through it, which is what you have to do.
Yeah, exactly.
That's part of being an adult. You have to have these conversations that are hard and not ideal.
Right. None of us want to do it, but it's like, just like put your big girl panties on and let's go. Come
pull
on.
Them up. Pull them up.
Okay. How do you, there's so many good ones on this page. Okay. How can someone who doesn't want to casually hook up still enjoy sex while single? So she doesn't want to casually hook up, but she's single and she wants to have sex. So I'm really confused. So
she like she needs a friend with benefits.
That's what I was going to say. Or you really? Just buy a vibrator and
do it yourself.
Have sex with yourself. Yeah.
Go fuck yourself. That's our answer.
I think there are a lot of people that I think would be down for a friends with benefits. So I think if you can find that person, go on a date.
Yeah, but then how do you go back to the friendship? You know, like, I mean,
that's friends, I guess. But maybe if you want a dating
acquaintance,
app, you're looking for someone, you're like, I'm just looking for a casual, you know?
Yeah, I feel like there's a ton of guys would be like, okay.
Oh.
Yeah. You have a line around the block.
Right. How do you balance sex and life? I'm too tired.
So good.
Can we talk about that question? What is that?
I mean, I think she's probably in a relationship and she's just saying like life is a lot, especially when you have kids, you know, like there's a lot. So where's the balance? I think for my first response or my first thought was like, I think it depends on what you prioritize. And, I have personally always been a high, like relationships are a very high priority to me, even my friendships. Like, and so I know life gets busy and all this stuff, but it's about like taking that time. And so like, if your relationship is a big priority to you, then sex is a big part of that, you know, priority. And you just make the time, you schedule it. Like I always say, Chip is like so against it.
Friday at seven.
Let's go, babe.
I think some people do have to schedule, or even like date nights, and that's when you have sex. You have your date night, or right. I also think just communicating, because this is the thing too. I think a lot of people have sex because they feel like they owe it to their partners, but then that creates resentment. So I think you need to communicate like what you and your partner need, like what's realistic with your schedules, and it's also be able to communicate when you can't have sex. I think a lot of people have a hard time because they don't want their partner to feel rejected. So I think you can communicate that, like, hey, I don't have the energy right now. And like really be validating too. I think people just, again, I think there's so much focus on not trying to come off as mean or having their partner feel rejected. So then they power through it, but then there's resentment on their end or they're just not feeling into it. And so I think you just have to communicate that. Otherwise, I think it does build up over time. If one person feels like they're doing it because they have to, and not because they feel like they don't want to, but they just don't have the energy.
Well, and I know for me, like I've always put such a high priority of sex in my relationships. And it's been an interesting thing to really think about as I process through like my part in my last relationship and everything, and just what I want to change moving forward. And I thought to myself about self-abandonment, because a lot of times, you know, I would feel almost this obligation or, oh God, I need to have sex because I don't want X, Y, and Z to happen. Right. And that's just a lot of self-abandonment. And so like your relationship with yourself is really important in this conversation too, because if you start abandoning yourself to make your partner happy, then like you said, there's either resentments that build up. It's a disconnect in general because you're not actually able to show up fully because you're doing it for them, not for you too. And not to say I didn't enjoy it, but it would just be like a situation where I think my fear was driving the bus more than actually being present in the situation. And I don't want to do that anymore.
Yeah. And I think people have different levels of sex drive. Like that's an actual thing. Some people have more of a sex drive than others. And so if that's happening in a relationship, which usually there's one person that has more of a sex drive than others, it's not a good or bad thing, but then you have to kind of work through that and talk through that.
Communication.
Exactly. I know it always comes out of communication, but it's true. If it's in a relationship, you have to.
Right. It's real intimacy though.
Yep.
Okay. How to refrain from scheduled sex or a sex threat in a marriage long-term. I always say this. I'm like, people like change your mentality about scheduled sex though. It doesn't have to mean you're in a rut. It's just like life is fucking busy and like, let's make it sexy. You know, we talk about like sexting all day on the nights, you know, it's going to happen, or making it special in some capacity. Like, I don't think it has to be boring or like manual. I think it can be pretty hot.
No, I don't think it has to be like when you have, you know, you take out your retainer and you bring the lube to the nightstand. I don't think it has to be like,
you're like, okay, ready. I'll get in the position. 1, 2, 3, pump. Like it's just, that sounds terrible. Yes.
So I think, like you said, like, it's like, whether it's sexting during the day or it's scheduling a date or not even a date night, it's like, let's like have wine together and like, you know what I mean? Like play this, like
make it sexy. Game.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think it has to be anything crazy. I think it just has to be something where you make it like a date night, you make it an experience. Right. Like we're scheduling sex. Okay. Sex at 7 a.m. We're like, okay, like Friday night, we're having our date night. Like, we're hiring a sitter if we have kids, right? Or we're Wednesday night, we're going to make sure to like make some fun cocktails. And like, it's just, so it's not like you're saying it's our sex night. It's like, it's our, like our date at home night. I think it just makes it feel less robotic if you make it.
Yeah. And I think it's also like, we all talk about how fun the beginning of relationships are, but then we stop doing the behaviors that we do at the beginning of the relationship once the relationship's more official. And it's like, the reason it's fun is because of what you're doing. Yes, you're getting to know a new person, but like, it's exciting because you're putting a lot of energy into it and you're doing fun activities. So it's just like, you can't maybe do it as frequently once the relationship's further along, but that is something that you can bring into a relationship.
Well, and I think this context too, is it like injects a little bit of the romance back into it. And that's why I think like just the idea of scheduled sex sounds so frigid to me. It's like, hey, I dropped it on your calendar. We're going to fuck at 7, you know, like, like even though
send you
like
a calendar invite.
Yeah. It's all semantics because like the hope is, hey, if Friday's date night, we're both getting laid. Right. You know? Right. So that to me is just a semantics thing. So I get that that is also scheduling sex, but I can get behind that. But if it's just like, hey, every Tuesday at 7,
he hates the specific time. That is where we lose Chip. Chip loses his boner if you mention 7 p.m.
Yeah, that's stressful. Like,
good point too. Yeah, exactly. And you like, we're going to go out to a nice dinner or like, so you dress up, right? It's like, then you feel like you look sexy or you take a cocktail or you like, play like a fun game, like I don't know, like, or you do like, you do something that the two of you really connect on. So if you two really like doing like outdoorsy things, like go out, have an outdoorsy day, an adventure, and then come back and it's fine.
And have an indoors adventure.
And then have
Okay, this one is a really good question to me. How do you feel safe with a guy to be able to orgasm? I think a lot of women would connect with this because we could, you know, like Susan Bratton came on with me and Chip and talked about this. She's a sex expert. And a lot of times, like with women, it takes a little longer. There's a little more of a process to get us excited to get to the point of orgasm. And with guys, it's just like much quicker. And so how do you let your guard down to be able to lean into that, like receiving even? I think for women, that can be really difficult.
I think sometimes women don't even know what gets them off. Like I think a lot of it goes back to social programming and not being taught. Cause I think they're doing more now. We're seeing more of like, the sex positivity and these movements to like empower women, right? To like be more like embrace their sexuality and enjoy these experiences. But I think it's still like women aren't taught, like, where is the G spot? Like so many women don't even know where the G spot is. Like it's one of those things where I don't think we're taught that. And I think women, again, like there's still Amy Schumer did a bit of like, you know, like women are just like the guys are always like trying to like, you know, get it in. And the women are just like, I'm tired. Like, and it's just this like weird dynamic where it's like the women are forced and like not forced, but like kind of feel obligated. Like you were like self-abandoned. Yes. I have to do it to please them. I don't think a lot of women know, are socialized to know it's okay to enjoy sex and having an orgasm and also become more familiar with what you want. So whether it's through masturbation or if it's you two talk about it and you're like, this position works for me. This one does not so much. I think also women try to fake orgasm a lot. And I mean, I did that when I was like, you just, cause you don't want to like, you just kind of, there's like
every woman has faked an orgasm. Totally. There's like absolutely not one woman in this world.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I actually think a lot of times it's because they don't even know, like maybe they haven't ever had an orgasm. And so like, and if you watch porn and it's like, you know, it's like, that is not what it's like. But so remember, Chip always talks about this time I got a dare on a bachelorette party to act out an orgasm. And I went very Meg Ryan in whatever. And Chip was like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
It was an
Oscar-worthy. But I was not doing what I really sound like when I have an orgasm. Right. So it's just, it was that over-the-top, the thing
you've seen. You really have.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think like we feel a lot of times like, oh, well, they're watching this porn that makes it look like this and they're squirting everywhere and all this weird shit. And then it's like, okay, we feel like we should do that. So that would make you not be able to let your guard down and actually get there. You would be acting.
Yeah. I'm not a sex therapist, by the way, but there are like therapists, I'm sure like you've probably talked with the other experts that do like even just you do your Kegel exercises and you do your muscle floor. What is it called? Your, oh my gosh, I should know this.
I don't know.
The floor, you know, like just all those other exercises.
Pelvic floor?
Pelvic floor exercises.
Yes, yes.
People do that to like, cause they have like a hard time like becoming relaxed during sex. So you have to do these exercises to really, yeah, like feel pleasure. Cause otherwise you're so stiff. I do think it's just, I just think women, a lot of women weren't, you're taught in sex education, how to stay safe and not get pregnant and not have STDs. You're not taught about what it
is. And how to get the guy off.
Exactly. Yes. So
we all know how to do that. So yeah, I think like something moving forward for me too would be like being with a partner who I can say like, and you can make this sexy too, but it's like, be patient with it. Like, let's slow it down because that's what resonates with women a lot of times is taking it a little slower. Not like it can't be heated, but like, we just need a little more time. Susan Bratton really did dissect the exact nature of why that is. So if you guys want the details, go listen to that podcast because she really breaks down our clitoris and all the things that it needs. And I am also not a sex therapist, so I'll just zip it on that note.
Yeah.
Okay. How many dates should you wait to say I want to get married and have kids?
Oh wow! I thought they were going to say sex. I don't. Honestly, I think you have to be direct. So like, if you, and I don't say, and it's funny because I say this like I'm looking for something, and I'm single. I say this directly. I'm looking for something that could ultimately become long term and like be a life partner, and I do want kids if like with someone who it works out with. And I always say I'm like. Not saying it's you. And I kind of like joke about that. I'm like, I'm not saying it's you, but like ultimately that's what I want. And if you're not someone who's wanting a relationship or a long-term relationship or a family, this is not going to work out.
And totally.
I think it's different if you're like, do you love me? And you want to be like, do you see this? Like, that's a different conversation. And usually you can kind of read, like, see if the person's feeling similar feelings. I do think you need to have that conversation if you're feeling sure, but I'm direct and I say it right away. And I tell my clients that too. And someone who gets freaked out by that is not meant for you. They're not.
No. And that's conversations. To me, it's like, you're just discussing your core values. Like, it's what you want in your life. And why are you going to waste time with someone who that doesn't align with? Like you said, if it scares someone off too, then they're obviously not aligned. But I do think it's like, you don't say, I want to get married and have kids with you. And it's the first date. Like, that's psycho.
Right.
But you can talk about what you want for your life.
Right. Yeah.
And there shouldn't be a time limit on that.
Well, I also think some of those things are really important to get out of the way.
Yeah. Like why would you go on a
date? If that person doesn't want to have children, then like, it's nice to meet you. Yeah.
Exactly. It's just like, yeah, we're getting this. We're not wasting anyone's time. Time is so precious. And I feel like you shouldn't spend time with someone if you feel like this is not going anywhere. You aren't on the same page. I also do that with politics too. I know that's crazy. And people have pushed back on that too. But if that's something that's a strong value of yours, like you need someone who's like, again, I'm a social worker. I'm very politically inclined. I'm just all about social advocacy, and I'm very passionate about it. If someone's not on the same page or gets weird if I ask that right away, then we're not a good fit. And it's no judgment. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work out. But I've had a lot of guys push back on that. And, you know, like, and that's where I'm like, okay, well, if you're pushing back, clearly this isn't going
to
work.
It's an issue. Yeah. I actually think in the past it wouldn't have mattered so much to me, but now I'm like, I couldn't date anyone else on the other side. Like, we would just, to me, it's like such a values thing at this point.
Right.
So we're just not aligned. And so again, why waste your time? Why waste their time?
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's, you know, I have a really good friend who's super Christian, and it's like, that's one of her things. She's just like, she's even said to me, I don't have to date a Christian man. I just have to date a man who is fine with me raising my child as a Christian.
Yeah.
So that's something that she like sort of like leads with.
And yeah, that's
why which I totally understand.
Yeah, I like that. I think a directness is best. And someone who pushes back, that gives the reaction's so telling. Mm-hmm. The reaction of someone is so telling. So if they get really weirded out, freaked out, it's a turnoff to them, then that person's not for you anyway. Yeah. So then you just already, you know, you figure it out sooner than later.
Yeah. Okay, what about when you're initiating but you keep being shut down? Do you keep going? Or are there different new ways to initiate? Like, what do you overall think about that? I'm assuming this is in a relationship.
Oh, initiating just sex or everything? Sex. I think that's a conversation again. You have to communicate, because I think some people are usually in a relationship. There's the like pursuers and the ones that are a little bit more avoiders.
Okay.
And so typically you have one and the other. Again, not extreme forms, but there's someone who's more like aggressive or assertive, and the other person is a little bit more like easygoing, go with the flow. They'll follow the leader. But I think, and that's okay, but I think if you're having a problem always initiating it, you have to communicate that and be like, hey, like I have no problem communicating it, but or communicating, initiating this, but I need to see it on your end too, because I don't feel whatever it, you know, it makes me feel not desirable, or it makes me feel like not good enough, or it makes me feel like you don't want to have sex with me. So I think you have to communicate that. It's that like I statement, you know, like I feel this way when I'm always initiating. Like I think it's communicating what,
especially if you're getting rejected. Seems like there might be a deeper issue that needs to be discussed there too. So
well, that's right. Cause she was, the person was saying they're rejected.
Right.
Oh, that, yeah, there could be. And people have lots of stuff with sex, like whether it's childhood experiences or trauma, or whether it's religious upbringing or spiritual beliefs or values, like some of that can get in the way and really become this barrier. Or they could have had a negative experience being intimate with their previous partner. We don't know what it is. And then there can be this ambivalence to have sex.
Yeah. Yeah. But all things that you would want to discuss with your partner so you guys can like move through it and understand.
Right.
So communicate. Okay, how do you get out of a dating desert when dating apps and bars are not for you? You and I were talking before, and it's like, I have never done a dating app, but I'm like, I don't see a way forward for me in the future when I do start dating again, because seems like that is the only way to meet people nowadays.
it just become, I think, well, the pandemic and then even sped that up, because it's funny. I was, this was pre-pandemic. This is actually a few years ago. I remember my friend was telling me she was out with a couple and their friend, they were trying to like set him up. And the guy was on his phone the whole time, like not interacting with this like setup. Like, and it's just, you see that at bars, like people are just on their phone, not just men, like everyone's on their phones. Everyone's swiping and liking and just so consumed with their phones. They're not looking at what's right in front of them. They're not really, I think, super present. So it's hard to meet people out and about these days. Cause yeah. even if you're hanging out and you're on your phone, like who doesn't go to like, you know, I go to the coffee shop a lot, like and alone, I'll do be doing work, I'll be on my phone. Like I'm not like looking around, like trying to make eye contact with people. Like it's just, I don't know, this is the world we're living in now. So I think it's making peace with the outlets we have, which a lot of them are dating apps or doing things that you enjoy. So I talk to people about like, not even necessarily to meet someone to date, but if you like say you're interested in fitness and you do a group fitness gym, you're going to meet community, you're going to meet people and they can introduce you to people. So something like an activity or a community that, you know, you share values or there's this like-mindedness. I think you can meet people through that. But I think ultimately dating apps are kind of where to go right now. Not to say it can't ever happen at a gym or a bar or a, you know, grocery store, but
yeah, I like the like-minded things. Like, because you're going to something that you enjoy. So already the people that are there are going to be more aligned with you than maybe a random on the street or a random at a bar. And so I think if you really are like seeking meeting new people, do activities with new groups of people and see what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Newly divorced. How do I begin to put myself out there to meet people?
Oh, I like that. Well, I'm excited that you're open to meet new people. That's exciting. I feel like it's exciting once you're, whether it's a divorce or you're ending a long-term relationship and there's like this hopefulness of something exciting to come.
Yeah.
I think it's hard. It's easy to feel insecure, especially if you were married for a while or with someone for a long, like, and you haven't been in the dating, you know, the dating game for a while. It's really awkward. It's hard, but just, I think it's really owning the qualities you like about yourself, then going into it, knowing that you have so much to offer, and then also reminding yourself of what you're looking for. I think mm-hmm. so many people go into dating without even thinking about what they want or truly want or what they deserve. So then they'll find themselves in situations that aren't super fruitful, I guess, because they're not really coming in with confidence or they're not coming in with an idea of what they want and what they're looking for.
I think that is such a good point, because then it becomes about, do they like me or do they not? And you're like, wait yes. a second, do you like them? Like,
right.
I've gotten in that situation before, and that's exactly why I've been taking a break right now. It's one, I don't want to bring any of the shit from my last relationship into my future relationships. And two, like, so I want to do my healing work and I want to take the time to get back to myself. But I also really want to get to know myself at this stage of my life, because I'm different. Like, I've evolved, I've changed. And I don't want to get in something because I just want to be in a relationship. Like, I really want to pick and choose someone who's aligned with me and who shows up for the relationship like I show up for a relationship. And for me, that's about knowing what I want, what I know that I like, standing up for what I know I deserve, because I think a lot of times a lot of that goes to the wayside too. You're like, oh, well, this guy checks these boxes, but you know, I don't know. Like, you just kind of make, what's the word?
Boxes. I feel like we then, like, a lot of people will make that person fit into the boxes.
Yes. Or
like, you'll be like, actually,
or that, try that, to. Yeah.
Yes. Or you're like, that checkbox actually isn't necessary, even though it might mm-hmm. be incredibly important to you.
Yeah, but it's almost like if you don't take the time to ask yourself those questions, and I hate when people say like, you can't love someone else if you don't love yourself first, but there is part of this like being with yourself and being comfortable in yourself and your needs and your wants and your who you are that you can take into dating too, to say like, I don't want just, it's not like this desperation of like, oh, there's a guy and he's fun. So whatever. It's like, yeah, he's fun, but does he line up in these other ways that are things that you actually want in a relationship? So we're not just like completely sacrificing our wants and needs, I guess.
I think people get so, and I think chemistry and feeling connected is important. Like that spark, like chemistry is important, but I think sometimes that overrides everything because you're so up and it's so exciting and you're like, so turned on or so like, this is it. And then you're not looking at the other underlying issues or the other things that maybe are just deal breakers, but you're not admitting it because you're so caught up in the chemistry. I think so many people just do that. I did that. Like, you're just like so caught up in the like attraction and how spicy it is. And you're like, this is realizing this person, I have nothing in common, or this person isn't anything that I actually need.
Yes.
I think so many people do that. Like, not just like men, women, everyone does this.
Totally. Totally. Moving in tips or advice. So if you're moving in with someone, do you have any advice for these people?
I will say, if one's moving in with the other, I think you want to talk about how can we make this space ours. I think I've talked to a lot of people where it's, yeah, when one partner's moving in with the other one, and it becomes like, you want to make your space. So I think it's talking about like, how can we make the space ours, whether it's like decoration wise, whether it's you bring in your furniture and I take mine out. I think it's trying to create a space that's both of yours, especially if you're moving to another person's space. I also think there's going to be a learning curve. And I think couples really struggle with this, because especially if you've been single for a long time, or, you know, like you're just used to living on your own, and then you have to share this space and this life with this person. It's going to be a learning curve. You're going to have times where you both hate how each other, like, you know, does the dishes, or you shower very differently, or you have different times that you do things. I think it's going to be a lot of communication. It's going to be a lot of growing pains. So it's just having patience with one another. So I think it's really creating a space that both of you like and feel like is yours as a couple. And then also allowing that space for trial and error with stuff like cleaning and schedules. And I don't know. And it could be also, and I think people get sick of each other really, really quickly, because you're used to seeing each other, you know, like a handful of times a week. And then you're like, we're here all the time with each other. So also being cognizant of when we need alone time and communicating that. Like, I think too, it's like, if someone's super social and extrovert and always wants to have friends over and you're not, you have to communicate. You have to tell me when you're having friends over. Like, let's talk about it. Like, if I had a long day at work, I don't want to be around lots of people. I think those are part of the learning curve too, is adjusting.
When people used to say the first year of marriage is the hardest. It's because that you moved in together back in the day. And like nowadays, most people move in together before they get married. And I think it's the same thing. It's like learning each other and taking that time to navigate and be gracious and communicate and all the things like you just said. So
yeah.
This is a hard one. My ex has moved on quickly and I can't seem to find anyone. How do I navigate this?
Oh, that sucks. Chip, what do you have to say?
I mean, I feel like Kelly's a little bit more primed because answer this, because she is.
Just went through this.
I feel like you're kind of nearing or getting closer to maybe being willing to date again. Yeah, so
that's true.
I mean, I do think you have to like listen to your body and your heart and give yourself the time to heal from whatever it was that your last relationship caused.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm the type that's like, let's just move on as quickly as possible. And I know that's not for everybody.
But that's also not what you do. I think it's really funny that you keep saying that that's what you do. Like, I've known you long enough to see you go through breakups, and it's actually not at all how you handle it.
Like,
so are you sure that's what you think?
Because I mean, that's kind of what I think, yeah.
But it's not what you, how you live your life. Yeah. So I'm just wondering how aligned that actually is.
Yeah.
I will say I did just go through this, and my ex moved on really quickly, and it was extremely painful for me, and it still is. Like, I still have to deal with that some days. It comes up, like, it's a full grieving process in and of itself, because then you start to ask yourself, like, did they even love me? Like, you go through the process. I just keep saying, like, I'm going through the process of grieving the relationship and then also those actions. Like, but I've gotten to a place of being like, that's his only coping. And I actually, like, am trying to work towards forgiveness and, like, knowing he's doing the best he can, I guess. but, like, you know, and we all take different actions, and I don't like those actions. And so that was, like, that's a validation for me of moving on is the right thing. That was. But what I do know as well is there's been a part of me that wants to be like, well, fuck you. You did this and that hurts. So I'm going to go do it too to cause him the pain, because I wanted him to feel the pain that I felt because of it. But that isn't aligned with who I am. And it would not be good for me. All it would do would make me spiral even more I also think it's extremely selfish to whoever I would do that with because I don't have anything to give. So it would be literally me walking into a situation to get my personal needs met in like revenge, I guess. And at the age of almost 40, that's just disgusting. So for me, it's just been a part of the grieving process with him to like grieve that separately. And then also to really know that like I still have to make decisions for my life that align with who I am and who I want to be moving forward and what I want to bring to a relationship moving forward and navigating that myself. And it doesn't, for me, it's not going to be quick. That's not how it's going to work. And it's not how I want to be. And so like just being patient with yourself, I guess, and knowing that when it is the right time, you will meet the right person.
And just because this person's met someone and moved on. I say this in air quotes because we don't really know if they've really truly moved on.
Well, right.
It doesn't mean if you're not finding yourself in the situation in a new relationship as quickly, does it make you any less like worthy or good? Like you're not good enough. It's again, like you said, it's everyone handles breakups and hope, exactly, and grieves differently. And if this person can move on, great. It doesn't mean just because you're not in a relationship that you're any less better than that person. I don't know. I think there's a lot of comparing too when people come out.
Well, I think it feels very personal, right? Like it feels like, well, you just didn't mean anything to them or they didn't value you. Or like, if you loved me, how could you fucking do that so fast? Right. And so you do take it personal. And for me, it caused a lot of insecurity. Yeah. But those are my things to work through myself. And now I'm coming out of it and I'm to a place where I'm like, no, that's just another way we weren't aligned. And thank you, universe, for showing me the cards there and knowing that like walking forward, I get to choose who else I let in my life. And also like it's forced me to have to get really confident in myself again. And like that does come with time. So just hang in there would be my advice and make your life based on you, not based on what your ex is doing.
Right. Yeah.
Because that's where you find the confidence.
Yeah, I was going to add that like often it has nothing to do with you. It's all about them. Yeah. And the moment that you can sort of realize and accept that, the easier it's going to be for you to mm-hmm. move on. Because maybe their coping mechanism is just to start over again, to forget, you know.
Our guys are like taught that. Like get over someone, get under someone else. And I mean, I've talked about this on other podcasts. I talked about this with Jake Woodard on a podcast about like the programming we give to men. I think that's so sad. Like, it's like, don't feel your feelings. But in actuality, I've read a lot of articles that men end up holding on to grieving a relationship longer because they don't face their feelings. And so they just like start having sex with someone else or whatever. And like, ultimately, it ends up keeping them stuck longer because of that. Then I actually think it's true. Like Chip said, like I'm finally getting to a more clear headspace where I could actually start taking steps to move forward. And that is because I've taken a lot of time to grieve and feel the shitty feelings and process and go to therapy and work my program. And that's what works for me, at least, is to actually put to bed the things from the past first.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what's going on with this girl too.
Like you said, I think guys are socialized to do that. And it's like a validation thing. It's like, it didn't work out with this person, but look, this other person's interested in me.
Yeah.
So we're good.
Right. I'm fine. Yeah. I don't need to face any of my shit. Just kidding. Yeah. I'm not bitter at all.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, last question, because I know we're out of time here, but this is actually a really good question, and I think it's a very good for an expert to answer. How important is the quote-unquote spark? I'm 33 and a guy has zero red flags but no big spark, but I don't want to miss out on a good one because I'm hung up on a concept from my 20s.
That's a hard one, and I think, okay, this is the difference though, is I think there needs to be chemistry. Like, you need to feel some excitement. I don't think it's going to be fireworks like we're taught and programmed to believe that it is all the time. But I think you need to have a little bit of excitement. So I think you have to gauge the spark. Like, do I look forward to seeing this person? Do I get a little bit excited to see this person? Do I want to share my, like, share my experiences, my day with this person? I think you have to look at those things. Or are you like, are you feeling you're doing it because you are just like wanting to be in a relationship, which, again, that's okay, right? If you want, if you're just wanting to like build a life with someone. And, but I think the spark, I think it's just, we've created this huge idea of what that means and looks like. And it's like, but I think we've just come to kind of equate spark with like, I don't know, like The Bachelor, like honestly,
right.
Like
which is so unrealistic.
Whirlwind romance where you just feel like swept off your feet. And actually, I feel like the longest relationships and like most stable, there's like a slow burn. So there's like, yeah. You're excited, like you're excited to see this person, see where it goes. Maybe you're not like, you know, having like a heart attack every time you see them, but you're still looking forward to it. And I think it's just, I think you have to check in how you feel with this person. Mm-hmm. I think that's more important than the spark, but I think spark is like, you do want to feel excited. I think that's totally normal. You want to feel attracted. But I think it's like, how big are we talking? Because I think some people have this expectation of like, they need to know it's the one. And I don't think that's realistic, because how many people go into marriage thinking it's a one and it doesn't work out, right? Like, I think it's not super straightforward. Like, we thought we're socialized and programmed to believe this like fairy tale ending.
Right. Like the movies show it, you can't complete, or you complete me kind of shit. Right. I actually talk about this a lot with my therapist, because for me, you know, like I talk openly about, I grew up in an alcoholic home that was very chaotic. And while, you know, my parents got in recovery and everything shifted, that was kind of the way, the dynamic of how relationships were shaped to me. And so sometimes for me, I have to be really careful when I feel really drawn to someone, like our chemistry feels on fire, because it's a dysfunctional chemistry that I'm familiar with. And so if I'm not paying attention to that, then I get in these relationships that just mimic my childhood dynamic. And moving forward, something that, you know, she and I have talked about is just taking it really slow, like you said. And even if I'm maybe a little quote unquote bored at the beginning, the boredom is actually probably like a good thing for a person like me, because the chaos is what I know. So like, I'm going to be drawn to that same thing. But what I really want from a relationship might come after a quote unquote couple normal boring dates, you know, and like the deeper connection can come after that. And that actually is probably how you find true love and true intimacy anyway.
Well, and I think about what she said, she's 22, like when you're 22 or in your 20s, like you're not seeking monotony. Usually you're not seeking like,
right.
You know, like that stability and that foundation. You're wanting like excitement and spontaneity. Totally. Which makes sense at age. You're just like excited to experience new things. And then I think what's hard is when you're in your 30s and 40s and, you know, just later in life, you want something that's more like that feels safe and secure and that's reliable and consistent. And unfortunately, like usually the spark or like that chaos you talk about is not going to give you those things.
Yeah.
And I just think about people in their 20s partying and stuff and having drunken fights and like this, like it's, you know, you get in these passionate fights and you're so angry at one another and you're yelling at each other and you're making up and it's like amazing. I mean, that's not sustainable long-term. And also it's like,
also like we're way too old and tired for that shit, right? Like I can't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Fun in your 20s. Leah, thank you so much. I think that we hopefully answered all you guys' questions, and there was a couple we didn't get to, but we are sadly out of time. So we'll just have to have you back.
Yes. Yeah. I love this. I love questions.
Tell the people where they can find you first.
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Her True Empowerment. And I have a new ebook that's out. So you can find that on my website and that's linked in my Instagram handle.
And that's what I was going to ask you. Describe a little bit what the ebook is about, because when you were telling me about it before, I felt like it was really in line with all the stuff we talked about today.
So it's basically an ebook and it's really specific to online dating, but this idea of dating with more intention and dating mindfully and becoming aware of what you need, what your values are, what you value in a relationship, what you want in a partner, and then dating mindfully and with intention slowly, even when you're on the apps, and what that looks like, how to do it, how to navigate uncomfortable situations and be direct and communicate. I think those are the things that, like we talked about, is so difficult for a lot of people, but it's super important to do. So it's just basically an ebook that helps you kind of work step by step through that process. And then also gives you some activities and reflective questions to ask yourself and even journal if you want. And it's, I think, going to be a really helpful tool for a lot of people.
Yeah. I'm definitely going to read. So it's at Her True Empowerment on Instagram. You guys go check it out. I'll also put it in the description of this podcast. Thank you again, Leah, for being here. Chip, thank you for showing up with us today. That was so kind of you to pleasure us. Yes. Oh my God. Thank you guys for listening and for all the questions. I love when you guys give us a ton to work with. It makes this so much more fun for us. So keep them coming to my Instagram is at Velvet's Edge. Chip is
at Chip Dorsch. ChipDorsch.
I love that you pretended like you weren't going to actually go there and do this, but thank you.
Give me that look. You're like,
I'm like, come on now. Hello. You were already late today. You can always also email us at theedge@velvetsedge.com. And as you guys go into this weekend and we've given you all the sex and dating advice to successfully go through this weekend, I hope, I tried to throw in something.
There you go.
As you guys go into this weekend and you're living on the edge with all the sex and dating advice that we just gave you, I hope you always remember to
act casual.
Bye.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta
right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from The Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.